the budget subcommittee does, I believe, have at-large members. The budget subcommittee does have at-large members. Right, so the standing committees also have at-large members. I'm not sure about all of them, but at least some. Any other discussion, comments, questions? Senator Waterford.
I move to waive the first reading.
Okay, waive the first reading. Did I hear a second? Okay. Seconded by Senator Shan. Is there a discussion on them? Yes, that is, we do have discussion on that. Any discussion of that motion? All right. All those in favor of waiving the first reading and moving this to a second reading, raise your hand. And those opposed? All right. So we're now in a second reading. So now pro and con arguments are in order because we're about to vote on whether to approve this change. All right, seeing no discussion, we will move to a vote. So all those in favor of the bylaw change to add two at-large members to the Senate Diversity Subcommittee, please raise your hand. And any opposed? All right, change carries unanimously. All right, thank you all. So we have time for some reports now. President Armignani, do you have a report?
No, no, listen. The things now much more probable that the trigger will be pulled beginning January, $100 million. And our share of that is $2.3 million. What is not clear is that a one-time or is it an ongoing reduction? It depends upon what of that is, and then you have to have different strategies how to pay for it. That's what we are be confronting as time comes up. It looks pretty clear, so in my view. Thank you.
A question for the president?
You were at a meeting between since the executive committee met. Is that right? On this issue,
the Senate executive committee.
The executive.
Yeah, yes. I just came back last night from executive council of many times.
Okay. One of the questions that one of the discussions they had at the Senate executive committee was, I think, or maybe not, but it has come up. In your discussions in the Long Beach meeting, was it assumed that if the trigger is pulled statewide, that the trigger must be pulled on the CSU?
I mean, according to the legislature, it does call for a trigger to be pulled. It gives them a top number, not a bottom number. It says up to 100 million. It could be 99.99. But it does say by the budget act that once the Department of Finance determines that the additional revenues have not met the new threshold, which for us would be, they'll have to at least meet $3 more billion, that it is, there's no discretion on pulling it. There might be discretion on how much.
Okay, and if I can follow up for clarification. So if the trigger is not met and there is some discretion on the sides, that would also allow for some discretion on which agencies, percentages, et cetera, or would it have to be across the board? Is that clear?
Oh, it's specifically mentions, the Budget Act mentions the agencies that one, if you are less than $1 billion, it names both the CSU and the UC specifically as coming into the trigger mechanism. At other levels, is the is K-12, is other agencies. But we are, if the extra revenues are as short as $1 billion, CSU and UC are triggered at up to $100 million.
Okay, but it's triggered up to $100 million. It doesn't say that everybody goes the same percentage. Or, in other words, the CSU could be triggered, but the legislature could choose to treat the CSU differently than some other agency.
I am not sure it's the legislature. I think at that moment, the determination is what is made by the Department of Finance.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions for the President? Provost Rogerson, would you like to make a report?
Just to announce this, really, I think most people here know that the Chancellor's Office is not going to fund the research scholarship and creative activities program this year. That would be a considerable loss to this campus because that provides important funding for mini grants and some summer salary. I'd like to announce that Barbara Butler, the Dean of the Library, is generously agreeing to fund this out of her funds this year. That money will be available due to Barbara's generosity. Secondly, I'd like to announce that Academic Affairs is about to start a search for a new director for the Office of Research and Sponsored Programs. And again, I believe that shows a commitment by the university to be the forces of research on this campus involving our students.
Are there any questions for Provost Rogers? Senator Nelson. The question was about the implementation of the American Institutions waiver.
All I have is the latest executive order coming from the Chancellor's Office that suggests that we are allowed to make a waiver for those students to be considered would be going over their load and their extending like the number of credit hours per week. So for those transfer students coming in under the SD1440, we would have the ability to waive that.
I was on a call
meeting is just having Senate. So I think we're still feeling a revolt, but perhaps delay or lend it to the
What I do know is, as of this point, the TMCs, which are the transfer model curriculum that have been proposed, the responses we've had from departments to date, there is room within the 60 additional units that the waiver would not be needed in some cases. So I think we're going to have to look at that. We have about 8 more TMCs that are due to the Chancellor's office on September 15th. So we will look at those very carefully and see what the departments have to report on that. But it seems pretty clear from the executive order that the waivers are to be granted in those cases. Now, the thing is, we do not yet have any students that are coming in under the SB 1401. And likely we would not see students. We might see a very few in spring, but it would not be until next fall and more likely the following year. So I think we have some time to really review the order and be very clear with our departments on exactly what the implications are for them on this. But I mean, clearly we know that there were committees of the Senate that opposed it, but it has gone through the board of trustees has approved.
I want to remind us we're asking questions of the provost now. Pastor Winger?
Right. Now, what you said is, do campuses have any discretion? And if so, who makes the decision? How will the decision?
I don't believe that.
Right. Senator Lucky.
Well, Provost Robinson, I thought you said that the executive order had the word may in it rather than must. That sounds like it gives the campus the option.
No, it's not an option. That's my call. I'm going to call it.
And I wasn't on the Senate last year, but didn't the Senate actually pass a resolution opposing it? So I'd just like to make note that it isn't just a few faculty, this is the voice of the faculty.
Are there any further questions?
Be a lot louder. My apologies. The executive order gives the chancellor the authority to grant that waiver. Has that authority been delegated to the campuses? I don't believe the president has received. It would be a delegation of authority to the president. The way the executive order reads, it specifically states that it is the chancellor's decision. And then there is obviously, as always, in almost every executive order, there is a clause that in the case for individual students that exhibit demonstrable hardship, the campus is, the appropriate campus authority is so delegated. But I haven't heard anything.
My understanding was that a recorded memo was going to go out, which sure doesn't mean that in translation as a memo that comes from the executive vice chancellor of academic affairs implementing any given executive order that has to do with academic affairs. My understanding was that there was going to be a recorded memo on this. My understanding was there was going to be a memo from the executive vice chancellor of academic affairs office being more specific about the implementation of this executive order. I haven't seen it, but it has not come out. Thank you.
All right. Any further questions for the provost? All right. We'll move on to the next business item. We're at the time search for the constitutional change on the structure of the chair of the faculty. This is attached to the packet and chair of structure and functions. Adam Zagelbaum will introduce it.
So once again, the board, I guess, has reflected much of what is said here, but the rationale is provided in order to propose a structural change to chairs of the committee. Current chair, elected chair, and past chair structure means that a 3-year commitment is required from anyone considering chairing the faculty. The reasons to consider this change, as noted throughout the document, is that a vice chair and chair structure would allow for someone to try out, for lack of a better term, this level of leadership after a 3-year commitment. Potential faculty leaders could more flexibly schedule their leadership around the research commitments, including potential leaves, departmental obligations, and various other things in that classification. The example given, I think, makes that kind of clear from the flow that's on the document. But past chairs may also choose to serve again, and without the requirement to serve as a 1-year chair elect. And the making of a chair position reelectable for a second term allows for at least a bit of continuity on occasion when faculty desire it to establish needed communications, mentoring possibilities, things that prepare for the next position to be filled. And most CSU campuses have reelectable chairs following this protocol and procedure, and the data that has been gathered is on the site sheet. Essentially, should the motion carry, structures and functions, low draft language for Senate approval in order to make certain of how definitions, roles, and functions of the chair structure will be carried out. And essentially, to the duties and the possible scenarios that reflect how the structure would be carried out are listed below, but they're only as possibilities and examples that illustrate how that structure would occur.
So this is a proposal to change from our current chair-elect, chair, past chair structure to vice chair and chair structure with reelectable vice chair and chair for 2 terms. So for a total of 2 years of service. So Senator Lutman.
I'd like to point out that the document that was attached to the packet today lays out the rationale for making the change, as it should, but there undoubtedly are reasons not to adopt the change as well. After all, the way we do it now is not something that was imposed upon us or that just exists by chance. This faculty in the past had a choice and adopted this way of doing things. Now, admittedly, circumstances can change, or even if they don't, people can change their minds. But there are, I think, some valid reasons for doing things the way we do now. And I think that before we, even this body, let alone the faculty as a whole, considers this, we need to lay out a balanced scenario of what is good about the change and what is good about the way we do it now.
Senator Lee.
So if I read this right, it's possible that of the 4 possible positions that officers and faculty in a given year, 3 of them could come in with no experience. And like right now, we've got this continuity. That's not a short of this proposal, but only in that case, they need to be passed.
Senator Byrne.
Perhaps this is simply a matter of clarification, and it should be, of course. I know that there is some attention directed to the virtue of the re-electability of the chair. There have been a number of instances in the history of the academic senate, the university and college, when the chair actually was re-elected. Quite a number of instances. So I'm curious about the nature of the distinction that's being drawn here.
CFA President Merrick.
Can you clarify currently how much reassignment time each of these 3 positions? Can anybody clarify that?
Sure. Chair-elect gets, of course, 3 or 4 units. The current chair gets 2 courses or 6 to 8 units, and the past chair gets no release time. And the secretary, no release time.
Thank you. More comments, questions for clarification?
I have a couple of questions. So the chair-elect does not automatically succeed into the chair. I mean, that would be a different election. And if the chair is re-elected, what happens with the past? What with the vice chair? And in the event that there is no past chair, who fulfills the duties of the past chair?
Okay, all of those positions are electable. So in other words, a vice chair could serve as a second term as vice chair, same as the president. It was same as the president, or I'm sorry, chair. And the duties, in the case that the what is now the past chair were vacant, that will be addressed in the bylaws. I mean, we would have, obviously have to allocate those duties so that that one did not become an issue. But again, that would be that's a bylaws provision.
More clarification needed in this, Senator Brown?
Just one question on the last page of our package. There are three instances in which chair election has been brought out and the change has been made, and I understand that because there wouldn't be a chair election if you proposal. In two cases, though, the chair election duties are given to the vice chair, and one case is given to the chair. So I'm just wondering why it's not vice chair in all three.
So the section in 3.3 where it says, where the current language says supervision of the chair-elect of the faculty, that's left from when the chair-elect chair instructor functions. It was always a function of the chair instructor functions. It's just that used to be the chair-elect, but it's no longer. So we're cleaning that up at the same time. Senator Bass.
Right.
That section is the only section in the bylaws that talks about duties of the past chair. Senator Byrne.
Oh, yeah. Was there a response to my question, or is that the matter that this change be recent?
I think I heard, I think the response was that in those cases, for example, if I ran again, I would actually not be chair for a second year. I'd have to go through the whole cycle again. I would be reelected as chair, and I'd start out as chair elected.
Very good. Thank you.
And Senator Waterman.
Yeah, my question.
So, any more questions? GDF, the rationale, anything like that?
So, under the chair's terms in the CSU, there's a 2009 page. Under Sonoma, it says it's not reelectable, but it sounds like it is reelectable if you start over.
Right, not reelectable as chair. Right, you can run for chair elect, but not for chair. Okay. We don't elect chairs. Okay. All right. So this will be back next time for a second reading with updated rationale. And Senator Lutman, if you have ideas about what should be in that negative points, please email it to Chair of Structured Functions. All right. Thank you. Okay. So we will move on to our 4 o'clock time circle, which is CFA President Merrifield's report.
Thank you. I'm passing out a document that says August 25th, 2011 letter from CSU Vice Chancellor Gail Brooks to CFA President Lillian Tase in response to CFA syllabi attachment recommendation, and August 29th, 2011 response from CFA President Lillian Tase. I'm not going to read it. You've got it in front of you. I did want to point out that as a result of a resolution passed by the Board of Directors of the California Faculty Association earlier this month, and as announced by me at the convocation, the CFA may take some kind of action in the fall of 2011 if we do not get a contract completed between the CFA and CSU management. One of the things that we recommended to the faculty so that the faculty could keep their students apprised was two sentences in the syllabus. Quote, the faculty union is in the midst of contract negotiation and there is a possibility of work interruption. Updates of this situation will be provided throughout the course, unquote. That was a recommendation of a fact. As you will read the letter from Gail Brooks, the Vice Chancellor, she has interpreted a factual statement as political and has asked us to cease and desist giving our students facts in a syllabus. Attached to, on the back side of that same sheet of paper, is a response to the Vice Chancellor from Lillian Tays, District Professor at California State University of Los Angeles and the President of the California Faculty Association, where she points out that the purpose of a syllabus is to inform the students of things that are required and of any circumstances that might come to bear over the course of a semester. I should also note that these exact two sentences that I just read to you were also recommended to be put on syllabi in the spring of 2007, because in the spring of 2007 there was the possibility of work interruption or course interruption. So I bring this to your attention because it is the position of the California Faculty Association, as laid out in Lil Tays' letter, that there is nothing wrong with informing your students about what may happen to them over the course of a semester. CSU management, for example, did not complain when we mentioned that there were furloughs. Why? Because there were furloughs. CSU management does not complain that if, for example, you know you're going to be gone for a conference, you put in your syllabus, I may be gone for a conference on such and such a day. This is an attempt by CSU management to try and intimidate the faculty by attacking our ability of academic freedom and our ability to work out trust with our students by telling the students what is going on. If you read those sentences, they are simply a factual statement. We do not urge any activity by the student other than awareness. I will tell you that I have heard nothing from this campus concerning this based on the Vice Chancellor's letter, and I appreciate that. But I do want to let you know, by the way, we did get a response where the California Faculty Association did get a response from the Vice Chancellor today, which of course I did not have a chance to print up. She has dropped the cease and desist language because she realizes cease and desist is actually a legal term. She is an attorney, and so I guess it's not quite as threatening. I will, in fairly near future, send you the entire letter that the Vice Chancellor sent to the President of CFA, and you can see for yourself if it's even particularly responsive. But I want to tell you, it is our position, it is not unprofessional or a violation of any kind of trust to tell your students the truth about something that may or may not happen depending on circumstances. I want to bring up, as of today, my position on the bargaining committee, the bargaining team has changed. I've spent approximately 6 years on the bargaining team, and as of today, I am now the chair of the bargaining team. So I can tell you that the California Faculty Association wants to get a fair contract with management. We are not looking to take a work action, provided that management will sit down with us for a fair contract. So this is not a threat or anything else. This is simply a clarification of reality, and we, again, reiterate, we believe you have an absolute right as a faculty member to clarify reality for your students in your syllabus. You could even do it as an addendum. Thank you.
Are there any questions for CFA President Merrifield? Senator Larcher.
Anything besides this Tempest and Teapot and the science show, is there any updates or news from the actual negotiations?
There is no news since when I talked about negotiations at the convocation, because we have not met. The bargaining teams have not met since the convocation. Our next scheduled meeting will be the 21st of September. We do have meetings established or planned, 6 days of meetings and three sessions through the month of October. We do publish headlines once a week during the regular term, which will have updates, but at this point, the most recent headlines came out, I think, earlier this week, and I don't believe there was anything specifically on bargaining, because the previous headlines brought us up to date to where we are at that.
Any more questions? All right. Thank you. Vice President Lopez-Pellez, do you wish to make a report today?
Sure, I have a few things. Welcome back, everyone. It's good to see you again. First, I'd like to recognize Marissa Thinkman. She just was noticed today, and she is one of 20 selected from the United States to receive a Fulbright education grant, and so she'll be going for 2 weeks to Germany to recruit to be with her other educators and international students, and hopefully I can break her loose to be able to recruit international students there. Also, congratulations. As you know, they're back, and as active as ever. As the new judicial officer, they're busy. Just as a little update, we have a few things going on that I'm sure that you're interested in. One is the Multicultural Center. I'd like to thank Dr. Armagnana and Vice President Schlereth for releasing the funds, and we're in the process of vetting a job description. I'm going to meet with Christina Baker, one of the faculty representatives and co-chair of the MCC Advisory Board, to vet through. I've already sent it to the ASI, so we're busy in the process of trying to promote that job description. We also are looking within the division to find what we think would be the best solution as someone who would take on those duties in an interim role. To have various volunteers really doesn't help the consistency to try to deliver and start the program. So we're looking at that, and we're hoping to open the doors next week after we get back to start having a leave some hours of the center open and starting coordinating with the different programs. So I think that's a very important thing for our students. Other than that, that's all the good news that I have.
Other questions for Vice President Lopez Phillips?
I have two questions. First, has there been a fee increase to students to cover counseling and psychological services that started this fall, and how much is that per semester? That's my first question. And answer.
Yes, $50 a semester.
Okay, so it did start this fall, and I believe we do have a crisis advocate now.
That's correct.
So it's in place. Okay. Secondly, on the Multicultural Center, you mentioned the job description. Is this going to be, I assume, for a director?
Yes.
So would this be a full-time position, one?
Yes.
And two, what would be the length of the contract?
Right now, for anyone that's being hired, we're doing year-to-year contracts. So it's a year appointment that's reappointable, just like mine.
Further questions? President Armagnac.
You had some figures this morning on the composition of the classes. If you have them with
us,
do you mind, for my question, do you mind announcing?
No, sir, Mr. President.
Thank you, sir. You're no longer Vice President.
Actually, Gustavo and I were talking about diversity and our diversity group. The Multicultural Center, just how we're working and moving. Around 2000, for a long time, we've been working hard to try to increase our diversity population. So we started looking at some statistics and looking at what we were bringing in our first year class. In 2008, this is self-report data, the first year class reported that 23% of that first year class reported that they were from an ethnically diverse background. In 2009, we started looking at how can we increase that and look at different programs that we can start running, goals with the Teal Family Summit, our single passport program, the litany of programs and things that we did, hiring interim recruiters in the LA Basin that were underrepresented populations to go and recruit for us that actually have gone to school here. We did some of that. In 2009, that number increased to our first year class 29%. In 2010, the self-report data was 36%, and in 2011, it is at 37%. For our transfer population, in 2009, the self-report data being from a diverse background was 20%. In 2010, it was 25%, and in 2011, it is 30%. So we continue. continue to try to make strides to diversify our students coming in. And thank you, all of you, for your help and efforts and energy in retaining them. Because I can get them here, but it's all our responsibility to keep them. So thank you very much.
Further questions? I'd like to encourage you to, if you haven't already, get the request to structure and functions for the faculty members of that FCC director search committee as soon as possible so we can have them ready to go when you're ready for the search. All right. Let's see. We're at our next time certain, which is the resolution regarding presidential searches, which was on your table when you, got here. And I'm going to ask Statewide Senator Nelson to lead this discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On August 7th, it was 23rd and 24th, the trustees had a special meeting where, among other things, they discussed the presidential selection process policy for the CSU. And out of that meeting came a proposal to revise the policy, and in particular, to drop language, or actually an entire section of the policy, to revise for campus visits for the finalists in any search for a president. And that is the president to go to campus, meet the select constituencies, get a new place, try to start building a dialogue with the campus community. There's a lot of movement and a lot of academic senates across the CSU system to write resolutions in opposition to this proposal. And the statewide academic senate is going to be acting on a resolution at its meetings with academics in opposition as well. And I have a suggestion of Chair Ford picked up the ball to write a resolution in opposition to that change for this campus. For your consideration. The resolution has released by the Board of Resolve clause the state's opposition to the change and asks that the resolution be sent to the Board of Trustees, the Chancellor, and the Academic Senate at CSU. The reason for opposition is that these campus visits are, from the perspective of many of us, I assume, a large portion of us, don't deal with the presidential selection process. In fact, these campus visits, it's possible that a president could be selected without physically coming to the campus. The formal process involves a review of nominees by two different committees. One is a committee made up entirely of trustees, and the other is the advisory committee to the trustees committee. It's mentioned in the rationale here. And on that advisory committee, there are members of the campus community, including faculty, staff, and students, that are faculty elected by the faculty. And that committee reviews the applications and gives input to the trustees community. Without the campus visit, that would be our only opening into the presidential selection process, the only way to go into it, the only way we could get comments coming into the Board of Trustees. As I understand that the reason for this change, I understand why they would use this reason. It's confidentiality. Apparently, in some past presidential searches, I don't know which ones on which campuses, internal candidates have applied for the position and their name has become public prior to the campus visits, and they have withdrawn. Once they knew their name was going to become public, they withdrew from the application process. And at least as the Board of Trustees is presenting it, that is the reason for this change. Many of us believe that the detrimental aspects of this change will vastly outweigh any concerns about confidentiality of, in this respect anyway, of someone's name becoming public. And so we are arguing against the proposal. In the first place, it reduces campus input for every campus constituency, not just the faculty. It reduces the depth and breadth of consultation. And it also effectively reduces the candidate's ability to begin opening a dialogue and developing a relationship with the campus that they are in the race to lead. I frankly think this makes absolutely no sense. It might be the campus, removing the campus business.
So I'll remind you, this is before us as a first reading. So any questions, clarifications? Senator Lutman?
I would just suggest with regard to the second resolve clause that we might include other campus academic centers.
Anybody else? Senator Brown?
I move we waive the first reading.
Second. Moved and seconded to waive the first reading. Is there any discussion of that motion? All right, all those in favor of waiving the first reading, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, so we're now in second reading. So now pro and con arguments are in order. Senator Rutman?
And I move the change I just suggested.
Okay. So Senator Rutman is moving to add to the second resolve clause that this resolution be sent to other campus academic centers as well. Okay, has been seconded. Is there any discussion of that amendment?
Just clarification, you're talking about all other.
Yes.
Do you have that written down, the amendment? Okay. So any discussion of that amendment? Further discussion? All right. All in favor of Senator Lutman's amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. So now we're back to the main motion. Any further discussion? So, see no further discussion. We're going to hold two votes. One is on the resolve clauses, and one is on the rationale. So, our standard is to when we pass a resolution, it's just the resolve clauses. So, if you want to include the rationale, you take a second. So, first I'll ask for those in favor of the resolve clauses in this resolution, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And the rationale, so we're voting to attach this rationale to that resolution we just approved. All those in favor of this rationale, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you, Senator Wilson.
Thank you very much.
I'll distribute this.
Appreciate it.
All right. Okay, so we are back to reports for a little while. Let's see. Executive Vice President Rainey, do you have a report?
Yes, thank you. As many of you know, we've kind of undergone a structural change to our Senate. Last year, we rewrote the bylaw and constitution changes. And I'm excited to announce that it is working out very well for the get-go. We have as the multicultural center, resources have become available. We now have a point person for that. We have a diversity senator on the Senate, Kim Diaz, who's been working very closely before school started, and after the first week, we've clubs on campus and students of diverse backgrounds. And she's done a great job of pushing and working towards getting that job description through, and then she's really excited to get her hands on and work with those students as that job description gets better resolved. Also, as many of you know, last year's Senate spent some time talking about a smoking ban on campus. In for last week, I think. And this year's Senate has created a working subcommittee to actively pursue what would be a good solution for that on our campus. And so we'll be tackling that issue, and we can kind of make sure that will be just kind of heads up so you all know the input on that. That's something that will be coming from our Senate shortly. The last thing, I've asked you for some your knowledge about. We are actively seeking student councils. Previously, we had senators representing the five schools, and now we have senators representing five schools and the diversity and sustainability. And so we have special interest centers, and they will all be holding separate counselors. And so we're actively searching for students that would be interested in those areas. So if you have students who are particularly motivated by environmental issues or statewide issues, things of that nature, we have specific centers that are dedicated for those, and we're looking to convene councils on a fairly regular basis to keep our student body informed and to continue to get input from them. So if you have your engaged students or students who are ready to go, please send them our way. We are actively searching for those students who are looking for this.
Okay. Questions? How many students serve on each council?
We're aiming for about 15. Previously, it's been right around there. If they get too large, as you know, it's hard to get unruly as somebody said earlier. It's hard to keep a consistent group. And so 15 is the number between about 10 and 15.
Carolyn, for sure.
I have to put myself on the list. Paul, could you send us, because I, now that I sit on ASI, I can see that there are a lot more of those issue senators there than the few you mentioned.
Yes.
So what would be helpful for recruiting for you is to have a list of those topics. If you could send that to Laurel or send it to Ben, and that way we can get it out on the Senate top listserv, and that way people would have a better idea. And then I wanted to ask you if you're still recruiting for the freshman leadership program.
Yes.
Would you like to talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. Thank you. So AS this year started is spearheading a freshman leadership program. We have our student government coordinator is one of our professional staff members who works, who's new last year, and this is kind of his brainchild. And the idea is it's going to be for first year students who are coming to Sonoma State and that are interested in honing their leadership skills and learning a little bit about the campus. And it's not going to be necessarily student government based. It's going to be broad range leadership skills. There will be student government pieces involved, and if that's their interest, obviously it's an excellent avenue to that. But it's really broad based for any of the first year students from campus and are looking to get engaged and learn how the campus works, learn a little bit about leadership skills and how to communicate effectively. We've had tremendous turnout for that and great interest for that from the get-go, but we're still accepting interests. Thank you.
Senator Pass.
So, I think you would find this on the caucus. Mark, the Senate representative to the Associated Students this year.
I was going to talk about that.
And is that because she's here elect?
So, what I was going to ask the Senate was, last year, you all appointed then-Chair Wingert as the Senate representative to the Associated Students Senate, and we found as the three chairs found that very helpful to have that very close relationship with the Associated Students Senate, and this year, Chair-elect Purser has volunteered to take on that role. So I wanted to ask the Senate if there was any objection to Chair-elect Purser serving as your representative to the Associated Students Senate this year.
I move that Marty serve as a society.
I heard a second. All right, we got a motion now. Is there any objection to that motion? All right, we will consider that motion approved. So thank you. Thank you. Tuesdays at 6 p.m., so it's a big commitment. All right, so I think we'll move on to our 425 business item, unless there were any more questions for executive meeting.
Wait, Paul, you may have said this, and I just missed it. If we have students who are interested in serving the council or even the freshman leaders, who should they contact?
Jason Pitzer, the student government coordinator. I will send out his contact information as well as the list of our interest senators this year. And that will be distributed widely to most people.
Okay, thank you.
I want to go back to an earlier point you made. You said that the student government is taking up a no smoking policy. for the campus, under what authority could you ban smoking on all the campus?
We cannot have that. The last year's Senate explored the idea and was kind of hopeful on it, and before their term ran out, before they could make any substantive statement. And so they charged this year's Senate with kind of exploring that further and trying to find a solution that would be agreed. And as you pointed out, the students don't want to say almost nobody believes, but that it would be much like this. Yeah, that could send it to write a resolution and ask the administration to whatever it is based on that.
Thank you.
Sangor is on this list posthumously, and as I announced at the beginning, that also applies now to Carlos Benicio. So, one member of the list, James Pickard at the bottom, has actually been eligible for some time and was overlooked. So he is on the list, despite the fact that he retired some time ago as a senior lecturer. So, is there any motion or...
Voted on by EPC and submitted to the Senate as either information or consent item. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. are any questions for Senator Kowinski?
So, may I make a suggestion that the Senate might be interested in that last fraction and send it around to us on Senate phone?
Well, the problem is it's in script, and since the advent of the computer, I've lost my ability to read it, so if somebody's willing to decode it and circulate it, I'd be real glad.
I would like to encourage committee chairs to use reports not only to tell us what has happened, but what they see coming up as a way to prep us for items coming down the pipe. So, while I don't want to encourage you to read the entire 10-page tiny script list, do let us know what's coming up in your face.
You'll be kept abroad.
Senator Singhas is not here, but does anybody wish to? Would you like to make a report?
Yes, we have just been last week, and we have 5 minutes to go. That's it for our report.
Great. Thanks, Senator Montero. And Senator Madonna, you have a report for Senator Barris.
In the interest of what you just requested, yes, we will be working with Senator Barris on several things. We have a full agenda for our first meeting next week. We'll be trying to take up some changes in policy that are kind of minor. We'll be bringing them. You'll see them soon. And the cheating and plagiarism, grade appeal, and grievance policies, taking the process out, deleting the policy in. And I also see down the road, we will be working on revising the fee referendum policy for student elections in the face of last year's kerfuffle about the student center. And I am hoping to work with FSAC this year on a policy or guideline set about how to cope with disruptive students in the classroom.
Thank you. Any questions for Senator Magadi? Surely some universities must have figured out a good plagiarism policy. Could we just copy theirs?
We do have a good policy. It's just an all those people. Every time we change the title of anything, we have to rewrite the whole policy.
Great. All right, thank you.
Terminator.com might catch that.
That's true. Staff report. Oh, good. Would you like to make a staff report?
I actually don't have anything to report today.
Thank you. I believe that's it. Is there any other business that anybody knows of that I've skipped? Yeah, I know. Well, we have the vote, yes. Senator Chan, items for the good of the order?
Can I please ask a question?
Sure. Is it possible to make microphones available for people to have a meeting? Because I find the meeting is closing in. Okay. Yes, if anybody has ideas for a better room, that would be good too. But, we keep exploring the microphone idea, and there's not a sound system. Well, there's a speaker there. I don't know if we could plug into that or not. All right, well, we'll look into it again and see if we can work something out. All right, so now Laurel is going to direct us to taking the Senate picture for the year. So we're all going to line up over behind that table in front of those white doors. All right? I think I'll adjourn us now before our picture, so we're adjourned. I don't know.
can we get it here?
Oh, you want it?
Here we go. That's looking good now. They have to be inside this line here. You can turn your body. You know, you can turn. Yeah, so more people can get. There you go.
I think it would be great, except my hair is even worse.
Do I have everybody? Okay, now smile. Let me take one more.
I think I have the measles.
All right, here we go. Awesome. Thank you so much.